Mr. President, status control on Jupiter 2. As of this moment, the spacecraft has passed the limits of our galaxy. It's presumed to be hopelessly lost in space.
Andrea Johnson, and you're listening to Retro Rockets. Join us as we explore the deep heritage of science fiction and fantasy, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Welcome aboard. Welcome to Retro Rockets. Can you tell our listeners a little about yourself and where we can find you online?
I am Gideon Marcus, and I am probably best known for being a time traveler. I spend most of my life exactly 55 years ago. So right now, for me, it is May 23rd, 1967. And the reason for this weirdness is because I run a site called Galactic Journey at galacticjourney.org. And basically, it started out as me sort of pretending that I lived 55 years ago. We started in 1958, or 2013 for you folks. And every other day would write an article about science fiction or the space race, basically stuff that was happening from the perspective of a fan who lived back then. And it got a little more popular and a little more popular, and it became kind of a snowball. And then Charlie Jane Anders blogged about us in 1960 or 2015. And all of a sudden we had thousands of people reading the journey, which was great. And all the people who comment the most end up joining the journey. So we've got like 20 people writing for us now, and they're all over the world, all ages, all ethnicities, all walks of life. And it's super cool. The other things I do is I run a publishing house called Journey Press, and we are dedicated to unusual and diverse voices. We have something a bit off-brand coming out next month. We have Erica Friedman's By Your Side, The First 100 Years of Yuri Anime and Manga. And that has been a tremendous hit. It's still in pre-order, but we've already got a couple of Japanese companies fighting for translation rights and articles written in lots of different languages. And that's just really exciting. But mostly we do science fiction and fantasy, usually by a female author and or including starring queer characters. And then finally, I am a speaker. I actually just came back from Atlanta. I gave a talk called Life is Groovy, Astrobiology in the 60s for AbSciCon 2022. AbSciCon is Astrobiology Science Convention. And that was fantastic. A super fun convention. Highly recommended.
Welcome back from Atlanta. I hope your travels were low stress.
Well, except for the fact that I had to wear masks. Not that I had to wear masks, but the fact that we're in an environment that we have to wear masks, and I was one of the few people wearing a mask. But you know, but everybody at the con was wearing masks because they're biologists and they know better.
But tell us real quick, website for Galactic Journey, website for Journey Press. Are you on Twitter? Are you on Instagram? Are you on Facebook? Where can our listeners stalk you and find you and discover everything that you're doing?
Oh my goodness. Now that you've characterized it as stalking, I'm scared.
Don't be scared. We're nice. We don't bite.
You don't, but other people might watch your program.
I won't let them. Everyone listens to me and I won't let them.
That's true. And people say lovely things about you. I told you Aww. About John at Kazoo Books. Galactic Journey is, of course, at galacticjourney.org. And Journey Press is, of course, at journeypress.com. And Gideon Marcus, that's me, can be found at gideonmarcus.com. GIDEONMARCUS. I am on Twitter. I think it's something stupid like GideonMarcus9. And that's, I hate social media, but that is where I hang out the most if I'm on social media. Yeah, GideonMarcus9. And I do not hang out on Facebook. I only use Facebook to repost Journey articles. And yet, everyone keeps trying to talk to me there. Stop doing that.
I'm not on Facebook either. I fear one day I'll recover my old account and there'll be like 700 messages from like people I haven't talked to in 30 years. But I mean, that's what Facebook is for. So I do want to talk to you about Journey Press, but first I'm going to pick your brain on all things Galactic Journey. What possessed you to travel back in time and go one? What fascinates me about the site is that you're literally going one day at a time. You're traveling to the future at the speed of one day per day. What possessed you to do this?
So there's a lot of time travel, right? Time travel is probably, if not the most popular genre of science fiction, it's definitely up there. And it's popular because, you know, it's fun going to these other weird places and seeing what cool things happen and comparing it to your life now. It's an alien world. But when you travel through time and in this sort of what I call the magpie fashion, where you're like, oh, well, I want to seduce Caesar, or I want to save Jesus on the cross, or I want to, you know, save JFK. We've never seen that story before. You get a very skewed perspective of events because you're isolating them and you're generally only comparing them to today. And the thing about living in a time, day by day, is you get the context and you understand why things were made the way they were. You get all the in jokes, you appreciate all the references. So I started back in 1954, and I largely picked that day because that was when my science fiction magazine collection became complete enough that I could play this game. And so I've been doing this for 13 years now, which means now we're watching Star Trek and we're watching it week by week as it comes out with the original commercials. We broadcast it over Discord. It is an amazing phenomenon. I strongly encourage everyone to join us because no one has seen Star Trek like this in the last 55 years. It's great. But we get all the references. We see all the DNA of where Star Trek came from because we've read all the stories that came out in Astounding, later Analog and Fantasy and Science Fiction and so forth. So that's why I do it the way I do it. It's a happy accident that I ended up on 55 years, because 55 years is, I think, the best period, like distance of time from today, to get these amazing resonances between now and then. It's eerie, the synchronicity between our two time zones, the things that'll happen in one and just have resonance on the others.
Can you give me an example of, I'm intrigued by the similarities and the resonances.
Well, so for instance, we all have to wear masks in LA, not because of the plague, but because of the smog. The mid-60s were a time of great social upheaval. When George Floyd was happening, we were having lots in the 65. We weren't having a plague in 65, but we were having a war in Vietnam giving us nightly body counts. There was this feeling of malaise and going the wrong way. And I suppose there often is, but that's a cyclical thing too. And they're mirrored in both times. I think if you look at the fashion, there's a lot of repeats, especially between now and 1967. Musically, that's when we start. That's sort of the edge of the window. If you listen to classic rock stations, what I listen to now on KGJ, which is our house radio station, which everyone can listen to, accessible from galacticjourney.org. That music is the beginning of what they'll play on radio stations in 2022. So it's a very familiar time. And one of the things you get out of living back then is, as hopeless as 2022 can feel, right? It often feels like the world is on fire right now. And in a lot of ways it is. And in some places, like my home country of Ukraine, it is literally on fire. But if you compare it to 67, everything is better today than it was. And that gives me hope. I hope it gives other people hope. The only sad thing, of course, is we've stepped backwards significantly recently. But we haven't gone back all the way, and I'm hoping that if history has taught us anything, we will swing back forward again, maybe even stronger than before.
And no matter what, we'll get through it. You know,
we
even in the bleakest moments of the 60s, we got through it, and we'll get through this too.
We're not even at the bleakest moment of the 60s, right? Objectively, that's next year. Although
deep
we
breath.
Did just lose, huh?
Deep yeah. breath. We, you'll make it. Well, you'll get
we
through it.
We did just lose four spacemen. We lost three Apollo 1 astronauts. We lost the Soyuz 1 astronaut. And really, things all started going downhill 4 years ago when Kennedy was shot. which we experienced in real time. We had Walter Cronkite on TV announcing it as it happened. We had journalists from, or correspondents from across the world writing Journey articles about it. And then we got into Vietnam. So yeah, right now kind of sucks, but the music is great.
You got to have some good rock and roll. You absolutely have to.
Jimmy just came out with his first album this week. So
how many times have you listened to it?
Just once this time around, but it will get, it is, all the songs are on KGJ and will get regular airplay.
Excellent. Excellent. How has, you mentioned you've been doing Galactic Journey for, I believe you said 13 years.
Correct. It's been on the internet for 9 years.
9 years?
Yeah. So I actually started 4 years accumulating ideas and material before I went live. And 58 was also informed by the fact that I'm a professional space historian, and the space flights of 1958 are actually my specialty, particularly Pioneers 0 through 2, which I think I'm the world's foremost expert on, aside from the people who actually made them.
And by now, you may know more than those folks.
They're mostly not around anymore, which was a very difficult decade to get through, because I became friends with all these aged engineers, got all this brain information, and then watch them all slowly drop off the earth one by one. And sort of Vietnam syndrome after that.
That's that got dark quickly.
Sorry, history's a rough game.
That is okay. And it's I choose to believe that you are carrying on their legacy.
Oh, well, that is sweet of you.
Yeah. In the nine to 13 years that you've been doing Galactic Journey, how has the journey changed over the years? How have your goals changed over the years? How has it evolved?
I think the most significant one is scope. So we started out, it was just me, and I was covering Galaxy Magazine, Fantasy and Science Fiction Magazine, and Astounding, which became Analog. And I was covering space shots, and that's it, because that's what I had time for. And then as I got more people to join in, we could cover more things. So we have an international focus now. We have Cora Buller covering West Germany. We had Rita Mospanova covering the Soviet Union. We have Kay in Australia. We have three UK correspondents. I'm hoping to get a Japanese correspondent soon, because that's overdue. We've been sort of making do, because Janice and I speak Japanese and we go to Japan a lot, but we'd like to get someone who's from there. We have a fashion columnist now, which is, we've had her for several years. Gwyn is amazing. In fact, she's on the Hugo ballot this year for the first time. So we've just been expanding, and also the things to cover grow, right? So we've always been talking about social justice and the position of the marginalized peoples. I mean, from the very first article, I'm always surprised when people are like, you know, Galactic Journey was great until you got all woke. And I'm like, did you read the first article? And by the way, I didn't invent social progress. This has been going on for decades before the journey came around in the 50s. But now we're just starting to see transgender issues, homosexual rights. The precursor to Stonewall happened in 1966 in San Francisco, led by a transgender person. So we can start talking about these things now, because now they're in the air. Before we could discuss it, but I mean, there weren't even words for it back then. And we have to keep our language at least, period, to maintain some verisimilitude. So for instance, the word sexism didn't even exist until 1965. How do you talk about it? Well, you find
how
ways
did
to
you
do it.
Talk about it. If that word didn't exist in a 2020s context.
So you have to be creative. We're pretty good writers. I think we do a pretty good job of nodding to a current audience. We talk about these authors cannot write realistic women. Women are getting short shrift. Betty Friedan's the feminine mystique. I mean, we can reference these things. But in terms of simple one word or two word phrases like male chauvinist, you know, it's harder. So you got to do a little work.
Thank you for doing all that work and being creative and talking about things that need to be talked about, but also keeping to your original plan of keeping all of your wording and your phrasing correct for that time frame. It's very impressive.
Oh, I play Spot the Anachronism every day as an editor, and I've gotten pretty good at it.
See, I play Spot the Anachronism, but I get a kick out of it.
Well, you won't find it on our site. Whenever someone does, I'm mortified. And then I go back and backfix every single article to make sure that no one can spot it.
Ah, the joy of HTML editing. You can just edit a blog post and no one needs to know.
That's right. And hypertext is about to be invented in the 60s, too, which is cool.
That is.
Talking about lapping ourselves.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of lapping ourselves, I have to tell a funny story.
Yes.
Really quick. So I went to AbSciCon, and the reason why I was there is because, obviously, Galactic Journey, and I'm a speaker. So I got engaged to sort of be the color and the humor. Why are exobiologists doing this stuff? And by the way, exobiologists are the coolest, hippest people you will ever meet, and super diverse. It's amazing. It is not stuffy old scientists. But anyway, since I'm talking about astrobiology in the 60s, which is a time when satellites, interplanetary probes are revolutionizing our knowledge of the solar system, all the settings for science fiction are disappearing. You know, Burroughs is Mars, Lee Brackett's Mars. Those don't exist anymore. And they get replaced with, you know, boring, realistic science. And one of the first authors to write realistic science fiction in the solar system was Larry Niven. So I was going to name check him a few times in this talk. Well, as it turns out, I went out in the hall to do my thing where I pump up the talk to get people to come to it. And in the hall was Larry Niven. As far as I know, the only science fiction author who attended this conference except me. And I'm like, Larry, you and I have met before, but you probably don't remember me. Would you like to come to this talk? You may come up in conversation. He's like, yes. So during this conversation, this presentation, I'm talking about this science fiction author who wrote this visionary science fiction. And if this author is in the room, would he please raise his hand? He raised his hand. And I'm like, Larry Niven, everybody. And they all applauded. And then we went out for drinks afterwards. So that was exciting. And one of the best things about the journey is covering these authors, like Larry Niven, Tom Perdom, David Rome, Alex Panshin, and then getting to talk to them in real life and befriend them and get all cool stuff. Kit Reed, I got to be friends with her before she passed a few years ago. So I love the friends I get to make in the journey and know in both times.
Oh, what a magnificent experience. I think even for me, that was a wonderful experience of running a blog for a long time, is writing about people's work and then meeting those people in real life.
Mm.
And it's kind of horrifying because sometimes they'll say, you said such and such in your article about my work. Did you really mean that? And I'm like, what's been...
How have you recovered from that one?
Took many years to recover from that one. But as you know, I'm still here, so must have recovered. You're listening to Retro Rockets. Our guest today is Gideon Marcus of Galactic Journey and Journey Press. Other than enjoying drinks with Larry Niven and having him sit in your presentation, tell us about some other exciting and surprising experiences that you've had.
Running the Galactic Journey? Exciting and unusual experiences. Boy, that's a tough one. I wasn't expecting that question. Because what I do is unusual, right? I mean, I live in this weird back in time thing. I think the most unusual thing is just the weird perspective I get. Because 2022 sometimes will just feel like this alien world. I guess that's the most unusual and fun thing is that every once in a while I'll come out of my bubble because I'm surrounded by 1967 media, right? I've got a TV station that plays the TV shows of 55 years ago to the week. I have a radio station. So I read the newspaper all the time. I do the crosswords every morning because I'm a dork, which is a word that just came out in 1967. And then I'll come to 2022. And what's so exciting about that is that it's like really going to the future. It's like, oh, wow, they have streaming video on demand. How exciting this is. I'm going to go watch the Flower Drum Song because I keep hearing about this great musical and I never got a chance to. And then I say that I watched it on late night television on some, you know, weird LA channel. But yeah, I think that's the most exciting thing is getting to time travel and feel like I'm traveling to the future, even though I'm really just traveling to everybody else's present.
Is it like time shock?
time shock? Is that a term of art?
No, it's just you know, kind of that dizzy feeling of, you know, how sometimes you stand up too quick and you feel dizzy. A little bit like, you know, that.
I guess you could say that. I watched Everything Everywhere All at Once the other day, which is a good
movie.
I really
want to see that.
It's worth watching. But the first few minutes, it's a very modern movie and shot very modern and ridiculous. You could not make this movie 5 years ago because it is just so ridiculously frenetic and CGI enabled and everything. And I remember for the first few minutes, I was just kind of lost. I was like, I'm kind of enjoying this, but I don't know where I sit. It's a little weird. It's bewildering. I'm used to 1960s cinematography. And then James Hong shows up and suddenly everything was right with the universe. James Hong is my anchor. You know, he exists in 1967 too. He's all over television as far back as then. And he's amazing. And he's still amazing. And after that, I was fine. I was centered in the movie. Thank you, James Hong.
Excellent. You were not dizzy anymore. Everything was right with the universe.
That's right.
I was clicking around on Galactic Journey, trying to find some articles that I hadn't already read. And I came across something called The Journey Show. What is The Journey Show?
Well, more accurately, what was The Journey Show? The Journey Show was really cool. The Journey Show was my way of coping with the pandemic. So in March, I had a burgeoning career as a public speaker in 2019, early 2020, tons of gigs planned. And then the pandemic happened and I was stuck in the house, and I've only recently been able to restart this career. And I was isolated for more than a year while we waited for the vaccine. And partly we did that out of a social responsibility because I could afford to stay home. And at the time, the only way to stop the spread was to stay home. So we did. We figured that was our responsibility. We're also rampant extroverts, so it was really hard. And so I decided, you know what? We're all stuck at home. We're all going nuts. And I don't mean not just us. I mean all of our friends. Everything's canceled. All the cons are canceled. All the fun is done. So we decided, you know, every month we'll have The Journey Show and we will bring The Journey to everyone. Basically what we used to do at conventions for live shows, but we'll do it over the air and we'll have special guests every single month. And it got really cool. So I'd started off with like the news of the day, and all these are recorded, by the way. You can go to the site and get the reruns of all of these. So we'd have the news of the day, and then we'd have some sort of musical guest, or some celebrity. We had a writing episode with a lot of big writers. We talked about women in science fiction. We had Lisa Jozsik on that one. We had a Wargamers episode where we had Luke Pulsifer, who's a pretty big name in wargaming. We had Tom Purdom on one of our shows. We had a great fashion episode that had Gwyn and and Gabriela Hernandez, who runs Besame, although Besame unfortunately is going out of business. And another local cosplayer who was great, did wonderful Hidden Figures cosplay. And the most recent episode we did, I think it was our last episode, we did 1966 and the Law. And we talked about, if you want to talk about the difference in time between now and then, we discussed things like Loving versus Virginia and other very important cases in the mid-60s because law changed so fast and for the better in the 60s. And my brother was the guest. And you probably couldn't tell the difference between me and him because we share a brain and look alike. But he's also one of California's foremost family law attorneys. So he was a great guest. So yeah, so that was The Journey Show. And by the way, I probably make it sound like all we do is talk about social justice issues or the law or the zeitgeist. First and foremost, what The Journey does is science fiction, right? And fantasy. We talk about the science fiction and fantasy of the day. Just all these other things are important as the lens through which we look at them.
And I think a lot of science fiction and fantasy then as well as now is a way to communicate social issues, changing laws, changing society, uncertainties for the future to a readership that is probably, well, if you're like me, you're not reading, you know, the Wall Street Journal, or
right,
you're not a lawyer, or you're not any of those things. So for someone like me, reading science fiction is an accessible way for me to get an understanding and a layman's education of many of those same things.
When you see a woman starship captain in Chip Delaney's Babel 17 or a polyamorous crew in Tom Purdom's I Want the Stars, then you see these things as natural. And if not something that you expect to see today, something you can expect to see tomorrow.
As something that is normalized.
Correct. And if you're someone who is underground but participating in these societies, when you see yourself represented, you go, okay, somebody sees me. What I'm doing is okay and even right. And I know in the future I can come out in the open and this will be all right.
This is why science fiction fans should run the universe.
Some of them. I you know, Bob Silverberg, bless his heart, we're both in the Fantasy Amateur Press Association together, and he's been doing it for 72 years. And he is unquestionably a great science fiction author. But boy, I just read The Time Hoppers. In 500 years from now, he's still got traditional gender roles, despite the fact that everyone's unemployed. So there's no reason for men to be the breadwinner and women to all be shrieking housewives. You know, so not all sci-fi fans.
I was unpacking some boxes the other day because even though we moved about a year ago, I still have not unpacked everything. And I found a stack of Robert Silverberg books and I was like, I really want to reread these. So, and I know I'll come across sentences where I'm like, really? But I do really love his writing style. So
you just have to, here's the thing. The context excuses some things, but it doesn't excuse others. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing The Journey shows is, look, even at the time, having regressive views was not necessarily acceptable to everybody. And science fiction authors would sometimes paint visions of the future that they wanted, not that they expected. So one does not get a free pass just because that was the time. Maybe for language, right? So for instance, in Sybil Sue Blue, the one time she mentions a black police officer as a Negro, but that was the most common name for black people in the 60s. And it's in the context of black people in this future, by the way, are completely and utterly equal in society to everybody else. And now they've got a new underclass, the Centauri aliens, which, by the way, it's bad to treat them like underclassmen, too, is sort of the message of the book. But you have this archaic word. That's a contextual acceptable thing. Talking about women only as breeders and shrieking housewives 500 years from now is not acceptable, even in 1962 or 3 or 7, because even at the time, people knew better. We had women senators. We had a woman astronaut or cosmonaut. I mean, it was obvious that times were changing.
Was he writing the future that he wanted?
Pretty clearly, it was the future that he perceived, although one has to wonder, especially if you're someone like him who's writing 50,000 words a week, which is ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
Is he writing to his market or is he writing what he believes, right? If he's writing to the bohunk conservatives, you know. So again, I don't give him a pass. And this is 55 years ago, too. I suspect he has more enlightened views today. But just in the time it punched me is, okay, this is a little reaction. And anyway, I'm sorry. I'm taking so much time on this.
No, that's all right. This is a really fun tangent to go down. I had not realized that he was writing so prolifically and kicking out tens of thousands of words a week. It puts me in mind of advertising illustrators that, you know, they had to create illustrations that their commercial clients required, whether they liked the art or not. And there's a lot of commercial illustrators that I really like their work. And I know that's not what they would have produced if they didn't need the money. So let's talk about Journey Press and your amazing Rediscovery anthologies. Tell me all about that.
I'm glad you like them. I'm pretty pleased with them too. Rediscovery Science Fiction by Women was our first project, and it is an ongoing project. And it came directly out of Galactic Journey because I was so pleased and surprised to see that women were so active. Now, the There are some people who say women were not active before Ursula K. Le Guin. There are some people who say women have always been equal partners in wonder. Neither, of course, is true. There were several dozen women writing science fiction around the time that Ursula K. Le Guin came around in 1962. And that's a lot, but it's about 10% of how many men were producing at the time. So women were, for a number of reasons, I'm not going to say whatever reasons, because we know what the reasons are for the most part, were not equal participants in science fiction until post-Star Trek and approaching today, where arguably women are even more participating in science fiction than men, and that's why they win all the awards, because they write more and better stuff. But anyway, in the 60s, that was not true. So anyway, but I found all these amazing women authors, and they tended to write the stuff that I like to read. I always say women wrote 10% of the stuff that got published, but they wrote 25% of the stuff worth reading. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm going to put these together in an anthology. I'm going to take a lesson from Judith Merrill and write something good, or put together something good. But at the same time, I didn't want just a bunch of good stories, because anyone can do that. I wanted contextual introductions to these stories, so people knew who these authors were. And to do that, I got together an army of current creators, some more notable than others, but all of them significant in some way, to do the introductions. And this book was a smash hit. It was in most American bookstores, which for an indie press releasing its first book was, I don't know how I did that. Actually, I do a lot of phone calls and many, many hours of work. And so it was always clear that we were going to write a second volume. But the thing is, we couldn't wait for the journey to get to 1968 for me to come out with volume two. So we did the 5 years before. So first was 1958 through 63, and then we did 1953 to 57. This was an even bigger endeavor because these were stories I hadn't read yet. So there were 400 stories by women that we know of that were women, because there may have been more writing under pseudonyms that we just never caught. The early 50s were a heyday, the first heyday of women writing science fiction, at least in the Silver Age. And so we had to read 400 stories, which is great. But yeah, it's fine, because these were all published. It wasn't like reading through the slush pile. Oh, okay. These were all stories that had made it through the slush pile. And then we had the tough job of picking our very favorites. And we cut no corners. We negotiated the rights to all the stories that we needed to get the rights to. And we got even more people to introduce them, and a few even bigger ones. Lisa Jozek, who I met because of Rediscovery 1, did the first introduction for Rediscovery 2. She's great. We had dinner a couple of times last week, and Kat Rambo, but we also had a lot of amazing other people. So I don't want to just, you know, hit the people who have the most name recognition. But Marie Vibert's in there. But yeah, lots of really great names that I suspect most people don't know. I mean, there's a few people know, like Lee Brackett, maybe Catherine McLean, but a bunch of names no one's ever heard of or hasn't heard since the 50s. And now they're going to get to meet them.
And you're giving birth to a legion of fans who are going to want, they're going to fall in love with a story in these anthologies and want to track down everything that she has written. And your phone's just going to ring off the hook. Sorry.
I hate to appropriate the term giving birth, but I suppose so.
It was the first thing that came to mind. Sorry.
Well, it makes sense. There's so many good stories in there. In fact, I talked about Catherine McLean's Unhuman Sacrifice, which was the very first story of the very first Rediscovery at AbSciCon, as just being this marvel of biological projection. It's just so many good things of all genres. Definitely worth reading.
Fantastic. I've got to ask, is there a volume three in the works? Please say yes.
Volume three is going to cover 1964 to 68. And the biggest snag for that one is I really want to get Pauline Ashwell's story, Wings of a Bat, which came out in 66. Unfortunately, Pauline died a few years ago, and I'm having a lot of trouble contacting her estate, but I'm working on it. We will see. But in the meantime, Journey Press has got a bunch of other books. My Keetra saga is out through Journey Press, and Keetra's done very well. In fact, Keetra alone got me full membership in the SFWA, which is cool.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's got illustrations by the youngest Hugo finalist in history, Lorelei Esther. If you want a YA series that is accessible and enjoyable by all ages and doesn't have a villain, it isn't a dystopian grimdark story, but is more like The Martian meets Lost in Space, or a slightly more positive The Expanse, you will definitely enjoy the Keetra Saga.
What are the... it's a series, right?
Correct. In fact, I just got halfway through book three, which is coming out next March.
What are the names of the first two books in the series?
Keetra and Sirena.
Fantastic. Thank you.
We have a couple of gay romances, The Eighth Key, which won the Rainbow Award for Best Gay Fantasy Romance last year, and At First Contact, which was featured on John Scalzi's blog in December. Great genre crossover stuff.
You've got so much going on. When do you find time to sleep?
That is a fine question. I will let you know when I have an answer.
All right. Because I don't want you apparently to ever have time to get any sleep. What are your plans in the next handful of months, handful of years for Galactic Journey and Galactic Press?
So obviously we're knee deep in Star Trek, and for the next, we're actually going to put together a paper fanzine over the summer in context with, you know, probably I Love Spock pins and stuff. The next few years of the journey are going to be an interesting transition through the Apollo era and beyond, out of the new wave and into this new paradigm where we discover Octavia Butler and so on, just what's on the other side. Journey Press, 4 titles a year, one title of rediscovery every other year, some of my books, some of other authors. We've got a book by Marie Vivert coming out in September, which is amazing.
Oh, I adore her.
Isn't she great?
Yes.
She's had this novel percolating for 20 years, and it reads like a modern version of a new wave science fiction novel. It's so good.
Oh, I'm shut up and take my money.
Yeah, you'll get it. It's coming. We just finished the cover today. So we'll be revealing that probably next week.
Excellent.
So I hate to say more of the same because we're always changing and evolving. That's the beauty of Galactic Journey, right? Every day is different from the last. But we're getting tons of new people. We have Joe Reed, who just came on and reviewed the C.S. Lewis Space Trilogy, which was interesting. And a bunch of new young authors seeing Star Trek for the very first time and talking about it. So that's really cool.
That is wonderful. What a great experience for those younger authors to, for lack of a better term, to literally go back in time and experience Star Trek for the first time. As we wrap up, if you want to let us know your websites and or social media again for folks that didn't write things down quick enough earlier.
Again, Galactic Journey is at galacticjourney.org, and that's where you can get the links to the Star Trek showings. Journey Press is journeypress.com, and Gideon Marcus is me, is gideonmarcus.com, gideonmarcus.com, and you can find me on Twitter at gideonmarcus9.
Thank you so very much for being my guest. I appreciate your time and learning so much more about Galactic Journey and Journey Press.
Thank you so much, Andrea.
The Retro Rockets podcast explores the deep heritage of vintage and classic science fiction and fantasy. I'm your host, Andrea Johnson. Our show is recorded, mixed, and produced by Andy Robbins. John Wenger is our special consultant. Our music is by Meter through a Creative Commons license, and Carolyn Baker designed our logo. Thanks for listening, and join us again next time on Retro Rockets. Thank you.